Hello and welcome to the GAK.co.uk Guitar Shop Podcast. I am your host, Mark Packham. Who is with me this evening?
Luke.
That's the sound of an inexperienced podcaster. Luke.
Luke Taft.
What's your full name and what do you do?
It's Luke Taft. I'm one of the guitar buyers for GAK.
Now, a bit of a different podcast, as you might have noticed. You'll probably be picking this up on a Friday morning. The reason for that is we are in Anaheim, California for the NAMM show, Winter NAMM, which is where all of the big brands show off their new gear for the year. Basically, this is kind of a roadmap to the stuff that's coming out for the rest of 2014. And we're here doing videos, looking at things, doing a bit of buying.
Yeah, just having a look, having a good time. It's just pretty amazing to be here.
It's been pretty overwhelming. We flew in yesterday and arrived sort of late yesterday afternoon. Had a bit of sort of jet-lagged sleep, and
I don't think I've gone to bed at 8 o'clock in the evening since I was a child. It was really weird,
and then woke up today and went to a place with all of the guitars, and
I think I've forgotten more guitars today than we saw. I don't know how that's possible.
How many other people there? It was like 12,000 or something like that. Is that right?
I think 12,000 exhibitors or.
I don't think it was 12,000 exhibitors. That'd be ridiculous. Well,
sorry, it was 1.2 million exhibitors.
No, that's not right. So, we're going to be doing one of these podcasts every night, just giving you a little rundown of what we've seen during the show on each day that we're here. And so, day one, where did we start? Who did we go to first?
First, we popped into Taylor, a little sort of dealer address by Andy Powers, who, for anyone who's not familiar, he's basically pretty much the head honcho these days at Taylor. Sort of Bob Taylor's taken a little bit of a backseat in terms of the designs, and Andy Powers is now like the master builder that's coming up with stuff. And we didn't get a chance to grab a demo with him, but you could see he was really excited about the new 800 series.
Definitely.
They spent a lot of time refining everything, and they've kind of spent a lot of time trimming all the woods and making different thicknesses of woods and really refining the bracing on each model for different shapes and sizes. So it's not just sort of different shapes of guitars anymore, it's kind of different shapes, different thicknesses of top, everything internally.
We managed to get our hands on one of the 800 series, didn't we?
Yeah, I picked up an 814 for a bit and it just felt unreal. It was so responsive. Beyond that as well, they've got the new ES2 system, which, again, we didn't really get a lot of spec on, but it'll be sort of another expression system, but to the next level.
Yeah.
Anyone that's ever played an acoustic with an expression system that I've known has just fallen in love with it. It's just pretty much the best way to plug an acoustic in. They just sound out of this world.
And there was a few new GS Minis as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, well, they did that in the last series of Limiteds. They did GS Minis with a pickup in sort of rosewood and quilted mahogany. And they've kept the rosewood in the catalogue, but made it a standard model. And they've also now put the EST in the all-mahogany GS Mini, which is really good. I think people have been wanting that for a long time. And the new 200 series also look quite interesting.
I didn't catch much of that. I was too busy looking at the 800s, which were kind of sort of blowing my mind, really. They were just...
Well, it's still all laminate, like the 200 series, but they're now gloss back and sides, all gloss, with expression system. So I think they're going to be streeting. I think we can street them for about 920, maybe 950.
£920.
Yeah, and that is just incredible for all gloss expression system acoustic.
Yeah, Taylor seems to be really aggressive on just like packing as many high end features in every single guitar that they do.
Yeah, it's great, and also they've sort of moved pricing down of everything, and with the new series they've dropped the 110 and the 114 without a pickup. So now, instead of doing that at the same price, you can get it with the EST pickup in it.
Yeah.
So there is no more 110 and 114. There's only the 110E and the 114E.
Yeah.
Which I think is a good move. It competes really well against the X Series Martins now.
Well, I think if people are looking at a guitar for that price, like that sort of buyer, I think just automatically wants to have a pickup and have a guitar that is kind of usable for, you know, a bit of home recording or like taking it out and about, doing gigging and stuff like that.
But they don't. But a lot of people I find don't want to have to pay extra for it. They kind of want something to be able to do.
Yeah.
And it's quite now nice that you can now actually just say that you're just getting the pickup free because it's the same price as it was without.
Yeah, definitely.
It's brilliant.
Definitely. So after we kind of had a quick glance around the Taylor stand, we're going to go back there tomorrow, I think, aren't we, and get some proper demos and stuff.
Well, we've
done.
Got a proper meeting with Andy Powell's book now, which we couldn't have really scheduled before.
No.
So it's quite nice that we could just collar him and say, look, can we come back tomorrow? And get some time with you with these, and we'll have a proper rundown of the 800 series, and he can talk through what they've actually refined.
Yeah. So after that, the biggest announcement of the day, or the one that everyone was kind of wondering what was going to happen, was the Line 6 presentation we went to this morning.
Yeah, I was quite amazed that they managed to run a teaser campaign and nothing was leaked on it.
Yeah, really weird. Yeah, really weird.
Even we didn't know what was coming out.
No, it was. A lot of people were kind of wondering, obviously they've just been bought by Yamaha, like how does that affect what is this product going to be? You know, was it going to be like Pacifica with Variax Electronics?
Well, I think maybe people were wondering that. Kind of I'd heard that they were going to do this weird amp a while ago.
Yeah.
But obviously it wasn't until they started the teaser campaign, and that all sort of came out after the Yamaha news.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a bit strange. I personally never thought it was going to be anything to do with Yamaha. I always thought it was going to be something separate.
Yeah.
Plus,
but
the amount of time it takes to develop something like this, it was clearly in the pipeline way before Yamaha.
Definitely, but at the same time, I mean, we haven't actually talked about what it is yet, but I can see this kind of replacing things like THR and maybe some of the kind of...
We've almost got our own little teaser campaign in the podcast. I like the synergy.
So what we're talking about is the Line 6 Amplify.
With an I at the
with
end.
With an I, yeah.
I like how it's all capitals apart from a lowercase I at the end.
Yeah.
It's almost like iPod, but...
But the other way around.
And also, it's the guitar amp reinvented. And in the presentation, they kept saying reinvented and then went back to how they'd already reinvented things. I think Line 6 are maybe going a little bit too Apple.
Yeah.
They've just kind of gone the other way around.
But, I mean, so what basically happened was the head of Line 6 came out and talked about how they were kind of striving for... Their big thing was, like, we don't want kids to look at their phones anymore and play games on their phones.
I didn't really get that.
Well, it's that space that everyone is going for. So, you know, across the board in terms of, not even just in, like, musical instruments, you know, you see people across, like, games and TV, everyone's striving for that market. The fact that everyone's eyes are on their phone the whole time or on their iPad the whole time.
It seemed a little bit like, there was one that... And the way they kind of dressed it up was that they're trying to make it as easily accessible as possible, so that it's almost like taking the effort out of things.
Yeah.
Which I guess is good, but sometimes, personally, I like making a bit of time to play guitar and going, right, now for the next 2 hours I'm sitting in my room and I am working on songs or I'm rehearsing things. But they're going for making it really accessible. And that's great, but I think the amp just stands as a good enough amp by itself.
Definitely.
It just functions as a piece. I don't think they needed all this dressing up.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing speaker system with a guitar amp in the middle of it, with a guitar speaker and Bluetooth connectivity with metadata and lots of other internet-y sounding words. I just think it sounded like a really good amp. I was really impressed at the part where, kind of in the middle of the presentation, they kind of dropped the house PA and just had the amp filling the room by itself.
I was wondering whether they had been doing that all along, because obviously he was playing along to backing tracks which didn't seem to have the guitar dropped out of the tracks. I was wondering
really
whether
out of time.
I was thinking whether their big reveal at the end of it was going to be, okay, now let's switch the PA off, this amp hasn't been coming through the PA at all.
I think that would have been a bit too much.
Well,
I mean, when it was coming through the PA, that had a lot of power behind it.
Well, yeah, but I was wondering whether we were hearing the guitar tracks off the track and then he was playing the guitar. I thought that was going to be their big thing.
I think that would have been a nice touch, but I think maybe expecting a 75-watt guitar amp or 150-watt guitar amp to do several kilowatts of PA's work might be a bit bold.
Well, that's true.
We should just mention there, actually, it's two amps they've launched. They've done one with an 8-inch speaker at 75 watts, which we think is going to be a little over £300, and another at 150 watts with a full 12-inch driver, which was going to be 450?
No, I think it was like 329 and 399, something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
But that was the kind of price point. None of this, as ever with NAMM stuff, none of it's like 100%, you know.
No. But I was genuinely amazed. Kind of from the teasers, I thought it was going to be some really gimmicky, awful thing that you kind of look at and go, rubbish. But it's basically the product that kind of, to me, blows THR out the water. And kind of my first question to the UK sales manager was, what did the Yamaha have to say about this affecting their THR sales? Now you're basically the same company.
Yeah.
And he didn't really have anything to say. He just kind of laughed and went, I think that's why they wanted to buy us, because we're going after the same market.
Yeah. The thing that really impressed me, and again, like we say, it's that kind of, they are trying to get into that space that everyone who produces anything seemingly is trying to get into, where they're talking about, like you say, connectivity and sharing and crowdsourcing and things like that. But they're doing it in a really, like, quite an easy way, I think, you could pretty much, you could use it on your own without doing any of that, but then also sort of be accidentally doing that in the background, because you're generating these tones and making these sounds, and then it gets uploaded to this server, and then other people can pull that down without really having to get involved with you in any way. It's kind of just sharing this creation.
I think for me, it was the ease of it. I think it's the first time sort of modelling and sort of being able to access any tone has become so easy that you just sort of do it.
Yeah.
Like before, you've always kind of had to come up with a preset or find a preset and put it together, like sort of other amps have tried to do in the past with like being able to share stuff. It all felt slightly more clunky, whereas with this, because you put the song in and then it brings up the preset to link to the song.
Yeah.
Should just mention there, you can load up a song through your iPods or through your iPad or anything with Bluetooth, and then the amp will find the relevant sound and load that up, and then you can just sort of away you go with it, and you can select that, mark it as a favourite, mark another tone as your favourite, and whatever you mark as a favourite will be what the amp loads when you load that song up.
Yeah.
Which I think is a really nice touch.
So for the example that they had today, I'm trying to think what the tunes were. There was like a Bruno Mars one that had like a sort of Andy Summers-esque guitar part to it.
Yeah, that was a really nice part, actually. If a tone doesn't exist already in the crowdsourced sort of set of tones, you can search for other songs that sound similar, load those up and tweak them and then rename them and then upload those. So
yeah.
It's even quicker than having to start from scratch on stuff that doesn't exist.
You just kind of go, oh, that Bruno Mars tune sounds like it's got a Police-y sort of guitar riff at the beginning.
And to be fair, it sounds really Police-y.
Well, yeah. So then the guy demonstrating today then loaded up a Police sound and went, oh, yeah, it sounds like that, but it's got a little bit of slapback delay. I'll just edit this preset, add the slapback delay, and then assign that to Bruno Mars. And then anyone else who's searching for that guitar sound gets to access his version of that sound.
I mean, that Bruno Mars song sounds so much like The Police. It's almost like that's how he made the song.
Yeah. Yes. Just augmented the Police sound that already existed.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't really augment it, did he? He just sort of did it.
So after we stopped by Line 6 and we're both kind of a bit blown away, we went to Schecter, who had a load of new guitars for us to look at. Now, I don't normally deal with Schecter. It's not something that I know loads about. But they've got some new models. They pointed out what Banshees, Hellraiser hybrids, and Stealths.
Well, I mean, the Banshees have existed for a while, but it's only really been sort of four models. Kind of going into a similar market as a lot of the Ibanez sort of prestige stuff. You know, sort of flame maple tops, decent tone with sort of mahogany bodies and things. They've changed a few things around with. I can't remember off the top of my head now, but I think, what did they say they changed the pickups to?
Some sort of stacked humbucker.
No, that was in one of the other models.
It's safe to say they've changed the pickups.
I think, maybe they haven't changed the pickups.
we're a little bit vague on the Schecter details, but we're going to be there's going to be some stuff going up on the site.
Oh
but,
God, say, the jet lag.
Yeah.
It's 3 a.m, our body clocks are saying it's too late.
But I mean, safe to say, the Schecter stuff was pretty impressive. The whole booth there was just kind of Yeah. I mean, it is what it is with Schecter. It's really metal.
The Blackjacks were the more interesting part. It's a sort of model they took out a while ago and they sort of done the Blackjack ATXs. Blackjack, again, sort of straight up metal guitar, glow in the dark side inlay dots with
a little red circle. That was the best bit. That's great,
yeah. Black inlays with a red circle around them on the neck. Yeah, more metal arch tops.
Yeah, Schecter, like I said, it's not something that I normally. I don't normally deal with, but just seeing that booth today, it just kind of oozed metal, didn't it? It's kind of just pointy bits of chain and stuff everywhere. Exactly what you'd expect from Schecter. So then after that, we actually, one of my favourite things that we did today, we went to the Dunlop stand and saw some new pedals. Well, who was that guitar player? What was the guy? Who was the guy doing the demo? Did you catch his name?
I know his face from other Dunlop videos.
He had a very impressive beard.
It was a very impressive beard. He had a very playful nature.
He did.
He liked joking around. So you could tell he was a man that actually loved his job, or faked loving his job.
Yes, sort of, very well. So we saw a couple of new bits. I think the best thing that we saw there was the Echoplex preamp.
Yeah, it's great.
So it's just, we should explain, it's the preamp from an Echo unit, the Echoplex.
Yeah. Which players have liked for a long time. I mean, people have used those all over without any of the Echoplex stuff going on.
Yeah, because it just warms up the signal. Yeah. It's one of those pedals where if you were to describe it to someone who was a kind of non-guitarist,
it sounds almost pointless.
It sort of doesn't do anything, but it really does though. Yeah. It's just on off switch with a kind of gain control.
Yeah.
Which, to be honest, on the kind of lower end of things, didn't seem to do very much.
No, you but need wind to push it up it a little bit.
Yeah, wind it up past about 12 o'clock, and it just thickened everything up. It made everything sound a little bit more, just a little bit richer, a little bit fuller sounding.
It's one of those pedals that you don't notice until you turn it off.
Yeah,
it's like a decent compressor.
Definitely.
You just have them running all the time and then you turn it off and don't go, oh, my tone sounds terrible now.
Yeah.
And you just don't really
just,
think
you would
it.
Just leave it on. And it's, I think it's one of those ones that, like a good compressor, is kind of a bit of a hard sell because people don't necessarily know what they do. But you just got to listen to it, and we've got a demo video. We'll have a demo video going up hopefully this evening. With a bit of detail.
Really cool as well.
Well, that was the other thing. The other pedal that we saw today was the FET driver, which has been out for a little while, hasn't it? It's under the Joe Bonamassa umbrella.
Well, it was custom shop. It was kind of a sort of selective dealership thing that they did, that they've now kind of knocked on the head, and they've just done the FET driver because it was so successful in a white box and made it a bit cheaper.
Yeah.
Which is great.
So, for those who don't know, what does the FET driver do?
It's an overdrive pedal.
Yeah.
MOSFET. It sounds a bit more amp-like because that's kind of what they emulate. It's kind of a nice round-sounding drive.
Yeah,
I think they sound good.
Worth mentioning that I think, and we've talked about this quite a lot on the podcast recently, is that Dunlop seem to have had a bit of a almost like a kind of change of direction, really, and the MXR side of things. In that they're just doing stuff that seems to be a bit more out there, like things like the Echoplex preamp. Like, I don't think that's a particularly safe pedal to bring out. It's just kind of thinking about what they can do that no one else is really doing.
And I guess it's important for them to do that, to just kind of remain interesting.
Yeah.
Like, you don't want to get boring and just keep just regurgitating safe pedals.
Well, I mean, there's only so many times you can reissue the Dynacomp, I guess.
and I think they've been resting on that for a while.
Yeah.
I think it's important that...
Definitely, they're definitely mixing it up a bit.
And sometimes you've just got to try weird stuff to see what works.
Yep.
I mean, ZVEX have been doing it really well for a long while.
Definitely.
Just coming up with completely crazy pedals that you've kind of really got to be on your toes to get to grips with, and then... Super Sequa. I mean, that's just crazy.
Yes.
But it looks kind of like they're going to be amazing. And I think we're going to have them in stock in the next couple of weeks.
Are we seeing ZVEX this weekend?
We haven't got any meetings booked, but I want to drop over the stand. The problem with ZVEX is it takes them a year to get stuff out.
Yes, that's true.
I placed the orders for the Super Sequa last year when I saw the NAMM videos. and they only just sent us the Proforma invoice for them like the week before coming out.
So there's basically no point us talking about what we see this week because it won't come out
not
until...
Not with T-Vex, it's why I haven't booked some eating. Yeah, yeah.
So after we were finished up with Dunlop, we headed over to the PV stand. PV obviously do kind of a lot of stuff and they had quite a lot of new product there, but we're really only going to focus on the guitar stuff, I guess.
Well, when we were at the stand, it was quite hard to focus on that because everything was bathed in a lovely purple light.
Yeah, and there was a really, really loud band playing.
Yeah, it wasn't very well lit.
No, it was very, like you say, it was a wash. PV have got a lot of their new bass gear, which you can change the colour of the LEDs on the front.
To 12 different colours.
12 different finishes, and that seemed to be what they had going on in that stand to kind of...
it was a bit crazy.
Accompany that, yeah, it was just...
But, I mean, thankfully, the amp, so the new Mini Mega with the 12 colours, that looks incredible.
Yeah.
I think it's, what was it, 3.5 kilos,
something like that. Watts. Yeah, not heavy at all. 1,000 watts. No. And they were talking about the kind of what, like the psychoacoustic features.
They've had Cosmos A and Cosmos C on different things for a while, and Cosmos A is like an octaver.
Yeah.
And Cosmos C is like a psychoacoustic effect where it boosts harmonics above the fundamental of the note that you're playing in such a way that it tricks your brain into thinking the fundamental is there more fully.
Yeah.
It's something that producers have done apparently for a while on recordings and things, where to make like club mixes sound good at home, where you haven't got massive speakers that can reproduce 20 hertz really powerfully, they'll kind of mix them in such a way that some of the higher stuff is pushed and then the lower stuff sounds more like it's there and you don't have to ruin your speakers.
Yeah.
So kind of the logic is that it can kind of fill a mix a bit better without muddying stuff up. Annoyingly, we couldn't get to listen to it.
No, we didn't have time for a demo today, but they do look really impressive. And PV bass stuff is just solid. It kind of always has been. And now the fact that they're kind of finally getting around to doing really something that's a bit smaller but loads of power.
Well, that's one of the things that I think Europe was feeding back to PV America a lot, where some of the PV America guys wanted to just keep pushing out sort of the bigger, heavier weight stuff.
Yeah.
And Europe, we were kind of thinking, no, let's go a bit more sort of like the Mark Bass, Class D, lightweight, neodymium. Let's really push lightweight, portable stuff. And kind of it's taken a little while to kind of filter that through that's what we want.
Yeah.
In Europe, it's, and now they're sort of doing
it. It looked really, really impressive. I'd quite like to head back around then and see if we can hear what it sounds like.
Yeah, and the Mini Max as well.
Yeah, so it's what are the two heads called? Mini Mega, which is the 1,000 watt, and the Mini Max, which was, what, 300 watt or something like that?
Yeah, I want to say 400 watts.
Yeah, which is just basically like a cut-down version, lost some of the features in a small box.
Yeah.
They also had some guitar stuff on display, which we did get to have a listen to.
Yeah. Well, the Valve King 2's been on its way for a while, and we've actually got it in stock back in the UK now, so if anyone sees the demo and wants to go for it's worthwhile.
I was really impressed by that because although we've got them in stock, I've not had any time to listen to them, not had time to like plug one in yet.
Yeah.
And we heard that demo today. They sound really good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think they sound like the old Valve Kings at all.
No, they sound good in ways that Valve King really never, I didn't think it ever could.
No.
And when they kind of sent us through the pre-release stuff sort of a few months back, I looked at it and I phoned the UK sales manager and just said, we're never going to sell any of this. It's way too expensive.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. And he went, well, let's revisit this conversation once the stock's available and you hear it. Because it's a completely different feature set. We've put a lot more into this. It's kind of a different thing. I almost wish it wasn't called Valve King.
Yeah.
And I can sort of see why now.
Yeah, it almost sounded like kind of like boutique-y. Like it had a real class to it that I think the original Valve Kings never did. They were just a cheap valve head that had quite a lot of gain on it. I mean, they were, and you know, people would probably admit that they wanted to make the most affordable valve head that they could.
Yeah, it's
that
like they could make. They've come at this from a different way. Like before, they'd kind of set a price and then engineered an amp around that price, which is how a lot of stuff gets made in the consumer world, from what I understand. But this time, it kind of looks a bit like they've taken the platform and said, "What do players want?" and then gone, "That's how much it's going to cost." That's what it is.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting. I mean, in terms of some of the switching and stuff, I can't remember everything that was on it, but yeah, sort of the power switching and the class, you can morph it from class A to class AB, sort of continuously adjustable switch channels, boosts and things as the original Valve Kings had. Plus it's got the PVM SDI, which is an emulated output on the back to model a 57 off on Axis.
So you could run it, it's got a no load setting on it, hasn't it? So yeah. You could literally just plug into a desk or... Didn't it have a USB out as well?
Yes. Yeah, actually, yeah. The USB out. It's basically got everything.
Yeah, and they just sounded really good. I was just really surprised by that they actually sound classy rather than cheap. And they had one other amp that we saw, which was the Viper Pros, which we only got a quick glance over. And they, to be honest, the ones they had on show were just prototypes, almost just there for display, pretty much.
I mean, all the lights lit up.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, but the feature set on those looks like they're going to be really good.
Well, yeah,
things like movable effects chain. Like effects movable in the effects chain just from the front end of the panel, things like that.
And I like the bit at the start where the guy that was talking us through it went, yeah, it's got four times the processing of the other Vipers. And I was thinking the original Viper, going, yeah, oh, that sounds really impressive. And then found out it's four times the processing of the VIP2, which only came out last year anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's probably got more processing power in it than has ever been available in a modelling amp.
Yeah.
You can just run, if you want, you can run four amps. And the Viper VIP 2 series, the Viper VIP series, just the models sound incredible in any way.
Oh, and there's also guitar modelling in there as well, isn't there?
They're in the VIP series anyway. But yeah, you can run a guitar model into three different amp models if you want.
And different tuning modelling as well. There's some stuff from the AT200, is that right?
Yeah, they've put in... Well, they've designed a new foot switch to replace... Well, not to replace, but to go above the other Samperas.
Yeah.
That are called the Sampera Pro, to go with this, that just looked huge. It was like a massive stage board. And within the whole thing, you can MIDI it up to the AT200 and control tunings from the foot switch through the amp and, just change everything.
That's a pretty versatile setup for not a lot of money. We could say that AT200s are like 300 quid. Now, get one of the Viper Pros and you've got like loads of modelling, loads of instrument modelling, loads of tuning, all at your, a touch of a button, really. So, PV, wound up PV and headed over to ESP. Now, the biggest thing I think that we saw at ESP was a kind of, almost like a rebranding of most of the range, really. Before, we've always known it that kind of ESP are the Japanese stuff, and there's also some, like the ESP Custom Shop as well.
Which is the uber Japanese stuff at several million pounds.
Yeah. And then everything else has been LTD. The cheaper stuff has been, the affordable stuff has been LTD.
Well, yeah, it has been for maybe the last 10 or 12 years. I mean, they used to do the ESP Grassroots before that.
Yeah.
Kind of, it seems almost a bit like ESP get a bit confused sometimes. Kind of, they sort of make different ranges and it all seems a bit all over the place.
Well, they've got quite a few different brand names sort of under the umbrella of ESP, haven't they?
I mean, kind of, it wasn't until today I found out that it was only recently that kind of worldwide distribution has come under ESP US.
Yeah.
And before, there was kind of ESP US and then ESP Japan. And they were kind of deciding which different models to make sort of independently.
Yeah.
And then that kind of led to them duplicating models and making models that were very similar but under different names, and it all got a bit weird. Whereas now they've decided that you're going to have ESP, as you say, which is the custom shop, which is probably UK street, maybe £3,000 plus. And then E2, which is going to be all the Japanese stuff below that. And then below that, you've got LTD, which is all non-Japanese ESP.
Yeah.
So it sort of, it's a bit more coherent.
So ESP, if you see ESP on the headstock now, you're either getting a custom design guitar, so something you've spec'd that they've built for you, or some made to the same quality,
but as a standard production,
with standard spec.
Yeah.
So, you know, like an Eclipse or Horizon in a blue flame top or whatever,
or one of those weird angel guitars.
Well, yeah, we saw some you can see this on the Twitter account actually, like a crafted like carved angel guitar that was, how much was it, like 50 grand or something?
I can't even remember.
It was a lot of money.
It was unreal.
But anyway, so those are the guitars that have ESP on the headstock. Then E2 are basically replacing the ESP standard series.
Yeah.
So and Japanese production.
But, and also they're replacing the LTD Elites.
Yes, which are now gone.
Yeah.
So they're Japanese build, but they're not the custom shop. They're just a production line guitar. And then below that, it's then LTD.
With Indonesian and Korean and Vietnamese.
Yeah. But there's some new guitars under E2.
Yeah. Well, I think there were sort of a few things sort of dotted about, but I think the really interesting thing was the ST1.
Yeah.
The ST2's obviously kind of like a small-bodied sort of Strata-like kind of thing. ST2, same body shape, no scratch plate, two humbuckers.
Wait, ST1?
ST1, sorry. Straight, same body shape, no scratch plate, two humbuckers. I got the spec right.
Yeah.
Yeah, great.
They've almost got a kind of like modern super strat vibe that you might see from other brands.
Well, yeah.
Sir and Tom Anderson and things like that. They're really going after that.
We've got the, was it Tiger Burst?
Yes.
There's only two coming into the country. We've got one of those on its way.
Yeah, that looks really nice. That's the most impressive one, I think, out of the lot of them.
The one little bit of buying we sort of got to do amongst all the video shooting.
Yes. Yeah, it's very nice, that Tiger Burst. And I just made a note of the other stuff that kind of stuck out, really. I think the Ben Weinman.
Ben Weinman, that famous player whose name we don't know.
Yeah. He plays for Dillinger Escape Plan, is that right?
Yeah, he's one of my favourite guitarists.
Okay.
I think he's phenomenal. I saw it first in a rig rundown they did with Premier Guitar, I want to say 6 or 7 months ago. It's like a X-Tone series, F-hole, sort of semi-acoustic, EMG's Evertune Bridge. Looks awesome.
It's totally, I mean, I know very little about Dillinger Escape Plan, obviously, because I can't remember the fella's name. But that doesn't look like the sort of guitar that I would imagine the guitarist in Dillinger Escape Plan plays.
No, and I was a bit surprised when I sort of saw him. I mean, he's been playing ESP for years.
Yeah.
But it was always, you know, sort of MHs or Ms, normally covered in loads of gaffer tape.
Right.
Just to keep the strap on or to keep it together, because he used to hit things a lot.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a bit of a departure. He was waxing lyrical about it in the Premier Guitar rig run.
I mean, it looks great. It just doesn't look like the kind of guitar that I would imagine he plays.
It's quite a weird shaped F-hole. It's almost not even an F-hole. It's just a hole.
Yeah. just like a weird curled round bit.
Yeah, but apparently he drew that because that was what he wanted.
Oh, wow.
I think the Evertune Bridge is the really interesting thing, though. If anyone sort of doesn't know, it's a new bridge system based on levers that permanently keeps the guitar in tune. Even if you sort of bend it, it keeps the note right.
Yeah.
So intonation is perfect for tracking a lot of sort of heavy stuff. It's great for anything sort of metal or where you're going to be picking really aggressively. It never pulls sharp, so you're always bang on the note. And if you want to do any sort of bending, you have a stop that you can set within the bridge. So when you bend up, it will kind of stick at the same tune for a little bit, and then the stop will kind of stop the saddle moving, and then it does the normal bending thing.
Okay.
Which is sort of quite interesting. It's not for everyone, but I think for a certain group of people, it's pretty much perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's also a really comfortable bridge underhand. It takes a little while for your right hand to kind of adapt to it, but it's all round and nicely machined, and it does sit there quite nicely.
Now, the other guitars that we picked out, just to talk about from the ESP stand today, the LTD TE-406 and TE-407.
Yeah.
Matte black Tellies.
Yeah.
Two EMGs?
Yes, EMGs made in Indonesia, about 500 quid, I think maybe 560, 570.
They look good. And
yeah, they looked amazing.
Well, like metal-focused Telecasters have really taken off in the last couple of years, I think.
Yeah, it's set in black. It's kind of like the sort of the Jim Root Tele, I guess.
Yeah, but definitely. And the 7-string looked incredible.
Yeah, it's just quite interesting to see a Tele shape with an extra wide neck.
Yeah.
Kind of look at it and go, that's a bit different.
Yeah.
I think they look awesome. I think just Tellies work really nicely for a lot of the metal stuff. Kind of a lot of players that would have had Floyds a few years back on sort of super straight things want to go for something a little bit more straight up and that kind of cuts a bit better. You know, humbuckers in a in a telly. You've got the dependability, and you know it's all bolted together.
It just makes sense for metal. Like, I don't know why people have, how metal guitars have kind of spiraled out of control to the point where people have got Floyds and loads of pickups and stuff. I just think, I mean, just get a telly, like fixed bridge. I mean, EMGs or not, or just, you know, high-powered humbucker, that's like the perfect metal guitar.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem for me trying to play metal on a normal telly was like the Ashtray Bridge.
Yeah.
I tried it once for a gig and just cut my hand up. I mean, that might say more about my incredibly poor technique than it does the bridge on a telly.
No, I think you're right. Like, when you have like those normal saddles and stuff, like if you're playing really aggressively, that can be a problem. So a much flatter...
Yeah.
Bridge, I think, and works really well.
Sort of modern touches like flatter radius fingerboard, bigger frets.
Yeah, definitely.
I think they're going to be a winner.
Now, talking about metal focus stuff.
Yes.
Orange released a new amp today.
Two new amps today.
The Dual Dark Terror 50 and the Dual Dark Terror 100.
Yes.
We've known about Dark Terrors for a while, which are the little portable metal focused amp. What was the Dual Dark Terror? What was it?
Two channels. The channel, I forget which one was A and B, but one of them is the channel from a Dark Terror.
Yeah.
And one of them is a new channel entirely. I think it was channel A.
I think A is the new one.
Yeah, with the A is the new one. B was the normal one with sort of the scoop control. Other one, 3-band EQ, 4 gain stages. So you've got a bit more preamp gain on tap than some of the other sort of three-stage oranges.
Yeah.
Like I think the OR100 is 3 stages. I think the Dual Dark 50 was the first 50-watt amp that they put a half-power switch in, which it wasn't until chatting to Adrian, the head of amp
Orange.
Design, basically, that realised that their half power switch isn't like a pentode triode like it is on a lot of other amps, which is kind of the quicker way of doing it. It actually drops the plate voltage inside the amp, so there's less headroom within the valve, so they just can't develop that much power, and it rebiases them at the same point. So I mean, that's just a much more interesting way of doing a half power switch, and kind of sort of changes the response of the amp a little bit and kind of cleans it up a bit more.
I was really impressed by the sound of those. Like, actually, the normal Dark Terrors haven't ever really blown me away. Like, I just think I would go for the Tiny Terror or a Dual Terror if I need a bit more flexibility.
Yeah.
But these sounded, with a bit more oomph behind them, they sounded big. They sounded really, really big.
It just sounded like a great rockhead.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it. Like, the scoop control that kind of the thing that's got the picture with like an on its side sort of hourglass sort of thing that Orange points up, I just think is the best EQ.
Yeah.
It goes from like really scoopy to really fat, and you just sort of find where you want it in the middle.
Yeah.
Straight ahead.
Yeah, just with one control. There's like so much tonal variation there.
I loved it when they introduced that on the Thunderverb.
Yeah.
It's just great.
Now the other thing, because we had an idea that they would be doing a new guitar head.
Yeah. As a guitarist, I find it worrying that I'm almost more excited about the bass head.
It was because we were just sat in that room. we had a little meeting with Adrian, who is, like we say, is the kind of product guy and product designer. And we knew he was going to be showing us these Dark Terrors. And then you were doing the kind of interview with him, and you just went, "I've just spotted a new bass head, I think." And he went, "Oh yeah, it's a new bass head. It's really good. Should we plug it in?" And he plugged in this bass guitar, and it was one of the loudest things I've ever heard. So this new head is called the OB1K.
Yeah, which we're pretty certain is Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah, I mean, it must be that. Why else would you do it?
It's such a straightforward head.
It's so all solid state.
Yeah. It's got a picture of a blender on the front.
Yeah.
How good is that?
Yeah, that is pretty amazing.
It picks only.
Yeah, picks only. So they wanted to go for that kind of real traditional Orange vibe where it is, pictures of the controls, what the controls do only. And it was... What did the blend control actually do?
It's all blended in some other form of drive.
Yeah.
You've got a master volume and a gain, and then it a blend that brings in some other drive.
It was kind of like a ratty drive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like real like gritty... sounding.
You can bring in like a normal drive with sort of the volume and the master, and then blend in some more of this other drive, and then you've got active EQ. I particularly liked it when sort of Adrian backed the gain off a bit and then whacked up the EQ.
Yeah.
And you had a third type of drive.
Yeah.
It just because it's active and you can really push the power amp through the EQ,
yeah,
essentially, and you can
definitely
actually really nicely boost it. It's 1,000 watts, which might actually be where the 1K comes from.
Yes, I realise that. I don't think they actually named it Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, I was really hopeful there. I feel dashed now. but yeah, 1,000 watts, Class D, surprisingly light, but
yeah,
reassuringly firm.
Like yeah, it's, they were saying it's the first amp they've ever done, which is like a rack mount. And yeah, it is available with a sleeve around it, like a wooden, yeah, so it looks like a normal amp if you want it, but also yeah, it will just go in a 9-inch rack.
Yeah, I like it as the rack mount.
Yeah.
I think the rack mount version is going to be 1299, and I think one of the guys was saying maybe 1599 for the version with the sleeve.
Yeah, which sounds like a lot for a solid-state amp, but I just haven't heard anything like it. For me, that might actually be the best thing that we saw today. I really like the Line 6. I really like the Amplify.
Yeah.
But that bass head just sounded so good.
I particularly like the bit where we were about to change the mic over from the guitar amp, and I picked it up, and Adrian just sort of turned around and went, yeah, you won't need to get that close. I just put it in the middle of the floor, and it was still clipping.
Yes.
And we should mention here, it's an SM57, so it's not exactly the most sensitive of microphones.
Yeah, it was
really loud. And this was probably sitting 3 foot away from the amp.
Yes. It was pretty full on. I thought that was my favourite thing I've seen today, I think.
Yeah.
So after Orange, we went over to Fender World.
Yeah, straight up to Fender World.
Fender have got essentially a whole part of the centre, haven't they? They've got like a whole hall dedicated to just the Fender products.
They've got pretty much an entire floor,
yeah,
give or take a couple of booths up there. They've booked out pretty much an entire hotel.
It's a whole thing for them. I've noticed the hotel staff are all wearing Fender t-shirts.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's quite a big thing for them.
Yes. And to be honest, we've kind of talked about the new... Well, we haven't talked about it on a podcast yet, but we've been doing a lot of stuff about the 60th anniversary Strats online. Well,
60th anniversary Strats, massive.
So four Strats, starting off with the American Vintage 54 Strat.
Yeah. I think, kind of again, a little bit worrying, I was more interested in the case candy you get with that.
Yeah, you just get loads of nice stuff. Yeah. The whole package, Fender have really taken this seriously in... For a company that does a lot of anniversary things, they seem to have an anniversary
well,
every other week.
Everyone does a lot of anniversary
things.
Well, that's
true.
These days.
It's true. But this one, they seem to have gone the whole hog. It's like four new guitars. Each of them comes with varying degree of like 60th anniversary stuff.
Yeah.
The American Vintage, you know, it's really true to what a 54 Strat, like, you know, the wide like tone knobs and stuff like that, the slightly wider knobs.
Everything was sort of differently shaped.
Yeah.
Like the knobs are skirted differently. The pickup covers are really rounded on the edges, like the original Bakelites.
Yeah.
And even the trem cover didn't have the same sort of slightly ovaled holes that they had after. They had little circular holes.
Yeah.
That look like they're not even big enough to get a bloody ball end through.
No.
I can see why they changed them.
Yeah, it's I think they've just kind of gone the whole hog. So really, I think the American Vintage really nice. They do the commemorative Strat 60th anniversary, which is just an American series Strat, but with some extra case candy and gold hardware and stuff like that. It's kind of, if you are buying an American Strat this year, you might as well just get that one.
Yeah.
Because it, you know, it looks like the 54, but it's down at the regular American Strat price point, and just a couple of neat little touches.
Yeah.
And then on the Mexican side of things, they're doing a classic player, which has kind of got that Gilmore, whatever it is,
the triples, number one Strat.
Yeah, the number one Strat vibe. So it's in that desert sand finish
with a gold guard and.
Yeah, gold guard. I assume it's the regular classic player pickups in there.
What is it they put in there?
They're like custom designed for those guitars, so they're when they were doing the whole concept of classic player, they went to the custom shop and said, "Can you design us some pickups, especially for these guitars?" I'm pretty sure it's still those in there.
Okay.
But again, gold hardware,
just, you know, looks kind of looks the part for not a huge amount of money. And then lastly, there's a classic vibe Squire. Yeah. Similar sort of vibe, really, that kind of more desert sandy. Oh, no, it's an Aztec gold, isn't it?
Yeah.
Gold, gold hardware. Yeah, just a kind of a cheaper way of getting involved in the 60th anniversary celebration, really.
Again, for that one, I think it's kind of just, if you're looking at buying a classic vibe,
you might as well get the 60th anniversary
one. Yeah,
you
want it in gold. It's kind of, once you're down at that sort of guitar...
Who wouldn't want it in gold?
Yeah, to be fair, it does look awesome.
And what else did we see? We had a nice demo of the triple play Strat.
We had a very nice demo. That man was a very friendly chap.
So it's a Mexican-made Strat, is that right? Yeah, they're a Mexican Strat, I believe. They? Yeah, okay. I think so.
I was more looking at the trying to
the demo
check
guy
the tracking.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Sorry, I don't have a thing for the demo guy. I should just qualify here.
Yes.
He was just an interesting dude.
So we should explain that the triple play is a standard Strat with the Fishman
triple
wireless
play
MIDI guitar system built in.
Yeah. It's a bit of a weird one for Fishman to do, but yeah, they developed a MIDI hex pickup with a Bluetooth receiver that tracks pretty much perfectly from what I've seen.
It looked pretty spot on.
Yeah. Annoyingly, I've still not had a chance to pick one up. But yeah, from everything I've seen, they're great. They work, which is probably a first for a MIDI pickup.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can just use it to do whatever you want, whether you want to split it and run different strings into different sounds, or just use it to play in MIDI notes and then sequence.
Yeah.
It comes with a really comprehensive software suite as well, which is good.
Yes, it was saying it comes with like loads of LE editions of like Sample Tank and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
Sample Tank, there's a piano. There's just everything you could need, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's sounds good, tracks well.
Yeah, I was really impressed by that.
Job done.
And I guess, what else did we... Oh, the American Deluxe Strats, new American Deluxe Strats with Fender personality cards.
Yeah, not sure about the name.
No, and I wasn't really sure about the concept until...
I thought it was awful.
Yeah.
When that came around the office, I looked at it and just went, what is going on?
And that was kind of the general vibe, I think. And looking at some people's comments online, similar thing. People are like, I just don't really understand what this is.
Yeah.
Seeing it in the flesh today, it made so much more sense.
Yeah, and sort of... It wasn't until I can't remember his name, but one of the
Alan,
American guys,
I believe.
It was the American guy that made it really sort of.
Whose name was Alan?
Was it?
Yep.
Okay, Alan. Alan, the American guy. Just made it sound so sensible. To almost to the extent of like, why hasn't someone done this before?
Yeah. So we should explain the personality cards. So on the back of this American Deluxe, there's kind of like a little window, like a little cutout, which has got one of these personality cards in it.
Yeah.
And essentially what they are is they're like a little circuit board that slots into your guitar and changes how the pickups are wired.
Yes.
So I think the standard, they come with one that will do you just normal Strat wiring.
Yeah.
And then one that will allow you to have like S1 switching, and then one that will allow you to have on the single coils like a humbucker in the bridge. It'll change something up a little bit.
Well, there's one card you can get that changes the tone controls into a master treble cut and a master bass cut.
Oh, yeah.
So it's sort of an EQ. And there's one which is a blend control where when you're in the neck position, you can blend the other two pickups in.
Yep.
And when you're in the bridge, you can sort of blend the other two in and then you can sort of switch between and stuff. And it's just a way of being a bit more flexible. And some of them have got dip switches, so sort of on the back, you sort of take the card out and you've got some switches. You turn them and you can put different values of capacitors in for your tone controls and things. And it's just kind of quite a quick way of tweaking stuff.
Yeah.
And kind of, when we sort of first saw them, as I say, kind of you look at it and go, that doesn't really need to exist. Like, that's just inventing another thing. But it actually sounds really interesting when you kind of sit with it and go, I can play around with all this stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of one of those people that likes getting out a soldering iron and trying different pickups all the time.
You don't have to do that anymore.
No, exactly. And
so Fender have ruined it for you, basically.
Yeah, and now I don't have to keep buying spare strings.
And that's true, because
I don't have to restring my guitars all the time.
Because you can just pop in a new personality card and you're done.
Maybe I should do that to myself. If I do that to myself, will I have more friends?
What if you keep getting a new personality the whole time?
Yeah, if I can just upgrade and be less annoying.
I think we could all do with that a little.
There are points in especially this podcast when I start waffling that you I think you're scowling at me. I think I'm waffling too much.
That's me putting in a new personality card. Giving you an upgrade.
Can we get personality cards that are slightly more awake?
Yeah, if we can get some that aren't affected by horrendous jet lag, then that'd be good. We saw a couple of other bits on the Fender stand. Troy Van Leeuwen, Jazz Master.
I think that's probably my favourite guitar of the show.
Yeah,
looks amazing.
He's been talking about this guitar for ages, so people pretty much know about it already. He's the guitarist for Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah,
to be honest, there's...
And A Perfect Circle. He's done loads of stuff.
There's nothing really that special about the guitar, other than... It just looks really cool.
And it's the best shade of red. It's like a dark candy apple.
I think they're calling it Oxblood Metallic.
Yeah.
Something like that. And
I think oxes need metallic blood.
Three-way switch on there, like Gibson-style three-way. Is that right?
Well, it's not Gibson. It's more like a big chunky electrical switch.
Yeah.
Which I think is just a good toggle. I find Jazzmaster switches really hard to get to.
And Mustang bridge. So just all the things that you want to upgrade when you buy a Jazzmaster straight out of the box anyway, it's already on there. I think they're going to be huge, just because people have been asking about it. He's been banging on about it for ages.
Yeah,
I think it's sensible upgrades to a Jazzmaster, and it looks so cool. Just looks so cool. The last thing, and the thing that interested me the most on the Fender stand, I think...
We've got a couple of things about Fender to talk about yet.
Have we? We've got Fender Rumble bass amps, which is what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Silverface with, I think they were a sort of ivory radio knob.
Yeah, they've sort of taken like a classic Fender bass amp. You know, they've taken some stuff from the Bassman series. That's Silverface. And just real stripped down kind of intuitive controls.
Mm. I mean, in terms of the look of it, it was really interesting. For me, it's a bit of an amp nerd, because it's Silverface, but with top-mounted controls and radio knobs. And they kind of, they've never gone together, and it just looks really nice, because it's kind of like a thin, black, sort of pine, sort of, well, it's probably not a pine cabinet, but it's kind of like the Fender cabinet with the thin sides, and then just silver and black, and then no control panel. And it just looks awesome.
They sounded super clean as well. Like, I find that's always the problem with... smaller bass amps, because primarily I'm interested in the kind of lower end ones, although they do up to a 500 watt head, was that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Or suit, you know, three 500 watt head, something like that. At this point of the day, things are a little confusing. But the practice amps, I think, are where this range is really going to shine, because they just like classy. They look really retro, they look really nice.
Yeah.
But also they just produce like a kind of rich bass end, which is really hard to do on a bass practice amp.
But then, I mean, you say about sort of the cheap stuff, but Fender have clearly invested some money in this, because, I mean, it's all Class D power amp and they're neodymium.
So yeah, yeah.
The speakers aren't cheap, and I think the bigger stuff isn't going to be really cheap either. I think they're going to be at sort of more sensible kind of, more reasonable price points. And I just think they're just going to be really good amps, really. I think...
I'm into it. Nice. I've always liked the Rumble range, and it's really good that it's getting a bit of an overhaul and getting a bit of love.
One of the things I was more excited to see was the new Select Strats with the inlaid fingerboards.
Oh, yes.
It looks like binding, but it's not binding.
Yeah, there was a bit of a weird one. Like, Fender Select have always been a bit of a kind of... They're all really well received, but they don't really belong anywhere in the range that's... Do you know what I mean? They're not like American Vintage. They're not standard. They're kind of just out on their own thing. They're at this, this like Select thing that doesn't follow the normal rules. So they've done inlaid fingerboards where the neck is made of one material and has almost like a... if you were to see it, it would have like a trench down the neck.
Well, I mean, it's obviously like routed and then they've inlaid the wood into it. And it's kind of...
So it gives the effect of having a bound edge, even though it's not bound.
Yeah.
The fretboard is sort of laying in the trench.
Yeah. I don't know what that's going to do to it tonally. I mean, because obviously people talk about the difference between a slab board and like a round lamb, and then some of the veneer boards. and how they sort of affect tone differently, as you'd expect. I kind of wonder how much wood is in that inlay and how much it's going to affect things, because obviously they've done, I think, was it rosewood in maple and maple in rosewood?
Yeah, that's right.
With a rosewood neck, actually. That was amazing that instead of putting a fender decal on it, they've just carved it into the rosewood in the headstock.
That looks amazing. That looks so good.
That was such nice stuff. Kind of, and the guy that was talking us through it almost didn't mention that, and it wasn't until I went, "That looks incredible," that he went, "Oh yeah, that's really nice."
Yeah.
So that's not my favourite part of the guitar.
We're running up nearly to time. I think let's just talk about a couple of
custom
guitars.
Shop bits. Fender Custom Shop.
Yeah. Oh yeah. We haven't talked about Fender Custom Shop.
We haven't mentioned the colour wall.
Oh yeah, that's true. All right. Well, let's talk about Fender Custom Shop. We also saw some Gibson stuff today, but let's talk about that in the podcast tomorrow.
Okay.
Because we are running much longer than I had imagined.
There's so much stuff going on.
So much stuff. So many guitars. So yeah, let's round out Fender by talking about the Fender Custom Shop stuff we saw. Firstly, two bits actually out of the catalogue. So the new 54 Strat they're doing, which I guess kind of falls in line with the 60th anniversary guitars that they're doing. It's a, you know, it's a spot-on repro of a 54 Strat.
Out the custom shop.
Also the Nile Rodgers Hitmaker.
Yes.
Which has been talked about for ages. Yeah. People
and
saying,
we finally got one on the way.
Yeah, we are lucky enough to have one that's going to be arriving fairly soon. I mean, that is what it is. Everyone knows what the spec is. Everyone's seen that guitar by now. He's been banging on about the fact that he's getting a custom shop guitar made.
What's the stat that it's been played on so many million records?
Something like $20 million worth of records features that guitar.
Yeah, it's something crazy. It's just unreal. So yeah, there's one other way for some lucky collector that will probably buy that.
Yep. And we also picked up some NAMM show exclusive stuff.
Yeah, the colour wall.
There was a big thing they were going on about, which were featured colour over colour strats.
Yeah, it's a thing that they always do at NAMM, where they do all the colours of all the sort of custom colours through the ages that they did, and then kind of this year they did it as custom colours over Sunburst on the Strat. And for the first time, strats with team-built strats with figured maple sort of flamey necks. Normally, sort of these neck blanks are reserved for master-built, but this time you can get it on a team-built strat.
So let's just break that down a little bit. So there were 1960 strats.
Yes.
And colour over colour, for people that don't know, is aping an old technique where Fender would only offer three-tone sunburst strats, and if you wanted to get a different colour, you took it back to your retailer and they would respray it.
I don't think you took them back. It was that if they had loads of sunburst strats and they got an order in for a custom colour, they'd just repaint it.
Right, okay, fine.
So
yeah, so that you'd end up with basically like a layer of sonic blue over the top of your three-tone sunburst, and obviously where that would wear away over the years,
you'd
wear back through and you'd see the sunburst underneath. So Fender reproduced that. They actually finished the whole guitar in sunburst and then finish over the top of it and then wear it back to the sunburst as part of the relicking process. So so they did that. AAA flame maple necks, normally available on the team built level, just normally on the kind of real high end master built guitars that start at like $4,000. So they were really interesting. The colour wall this year was a really good guitars that you wouldn't normally see.
Yeah.
And the other thing worth mentioning, which might take a little bit of explaining, were the L series guitars.
Yes. The custom shop sort of reissues normally have an R series serial number.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, reissue. 60 Strats for a long period had an L series
L serial number.
Yeah, an L serial number, which I'd always been told was because when they got the nameplates made up, they all got accidentally stamped with L at the start
instead of one.
Yeah, as it should have been.
Yeah.
Originally, I think they had five digits as the serial number, and then at sort of early 1960, they had to change to six digits. Should have added a one, and instead added an L. And they're obviously for that reason really collectible.
Yeah.
Because they only existed for a while. So it it's kind of for the first run, the custom shop I've ever done, they've decided to put L's on some stuff, and that's kind of the significant difference there. It's just going to be a really collectible, really interesting guitar. Which colour was it we went for?
We've got a desert sand coming. So yes. Again, like that kind of Gilmore number one Strat type thing. Yeah. Luke, we're up at an hour, and I wanted to do half an hour a night, and we've done an hour.
Yeah.
Let's wrap this up. There's more to come tomorrow.
Yngwie Malmsteen's got a signature distortion pedal.
And more importantly, Yngwie Malmsteen's got a signature gig bag that is leopard print inside.
Yes.
We can talk about this some more tomorrow. I've got a couple of pictures. I'll put those up. Do keep an eye on the Twitter page. It's twitter.com/GAK_co_UK. And the Facebook page as well, facebook.com/GAK music. We're putting loads of stuff up there, all the official news from the show. Hopefully we're trying to get it up there as quick as we can. Videos, loads of pictures, and that's where these podcasts will go as well. Join us tomorrow. We're going to have loads more news from the show. Thanks very much.